morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Friday, February the 18th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. The World Health Organization and the European Investment Bank have partnered with the European Union and the African Union to raise 1 billion euros of investments to support African countries close the health funding gap. And France and its allies have announced a coordinated military withdrawal from Mali. But how is that going to complicate their fight against Islamist militants in the region?
You will need to have some sort of a collaboration with the Malians, because this is not, I mean, these are all cross-border conflicts. So that's, I think, the big issue. So even if they're going to go to some place, how are they going to continue working with the Malian authorities? Because you need to.
That is Andrew Leibovich. He's a Sahel analyst for the European Council on Foreign Relations. Zimbabwe's High Court has voided the government's three-month suspension of striking teachers.
We managed to present arguments before the court, and the judge has given us an order. And we managed to prove that when our client has got a right not to be suspended in such a manner.
And Ethiopian lawmakers voted Tuesday to lift a state of emergency in place since November. However, the government is yet to release thousands of civilians detained under the emergency law. We'll have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, France and its allies Thursday announced a coordinated military withdrawal from Mali. France sent troops to push occupying militants out of northern Mali in 2013 and has been fighting insurgents alongside Malian troops ever since. Analysts say the withdrawal could have serious implications for security in Mali and across the region. Annie Risenberg reports from Bamako in Mali.
A statement by France in conjunction with the French-led European Takuba Task Force in Canada cited multiple obstructions by the Malian transitional authorities. It also said political, operational, and legal conditions are no longer met to continue fighting terrorism. Malian officials have not commented on the statement. The announcement follows increasing tensions between France and Mali. Mali's interim prime minister, Shogo Kokala Maiga, has accused France of using its military mission against Islamist militants to divide the African country. He has not provided evidence to back up his claims, and France has not responded to the accusations. French forces arrived in 2013 to take back control of northern Mali from Islamists in Operation Serval, which was later replaced by the anti-insurgent Operation Barkhane. Malians warmly welcomed the French army's arrival, but as violence and instability increased in the years since, approval of the French military presence dropped sharply. On the streets of Bamako, Malians say they are happy to see France leave. Soumanou Koni spoke while on a short break from work as a bank agent. He says that since Barkhane started, since Serval started and transitioned into Barkhane, insecurity has grown in Mali. Boubacar Salif Traoré is a Bamako-based security consultant. Speaking via a messaging app from the capital, he says that although the Malian army is ramping up its efforts and training, managing insecurity on its own will be a challenge.
L'armée malienne est en processus.
Traoré says the Malian army is in the process of reconstruction and that the troops are ready to advance on the ground. But, he notes, the Malian territory is immense, 2.5 times the size of France. So it will be very difficult for the Malian army to face this situation alone, he says. He also says instability in Mali is not just a pressing issue to countries in the Sahel, but to all of West Africa. Andrew Leibovich is a Sahel analyst at the European Council on Foreign Relations. Speaking from Berlin, he addressed the difficulties ahead in terms of the Malian army's ability to take on Islamists, including JNIM, an Al-Qaeda-aligned militant group, and ISGS, Islamic State in the Greater Sahara.
There's been recently a Malian military offensive in some places, reportedly in conjunction with Russian cooperation. That has had a limited impact for now. There's been, in some areas, a return of some calm, but at the same time, militants particularly associated with JNIM, but also ISGS, are still present. They are still active, and nothing has really changed on a deeper level.
France has said that it will continue fighting terrorism in the Sahel. President Emmanuel Macron said during an address from Paris Thursday morning that European forces will be moved to neighboring Niger. Kars de Bruin heads the Sahel program at the Netherlands Klingendael Institute. He says that fighting insecurity in the Sahel from neighboring countries without cooperating with the Malian authorities will be complicated.
Wherever you go, if you go to Burkina, Niger, Benin, or Abidjan, you will need to have some sort of a collaboration with the Malians, because this is not, I mean, these are all cross-border conflicts. So that's, I think, the big issue. So even if they're going to go to someplace, how are they going to continue working with the Malian authorities? Because you need to.
Macron said the military withdrawal could take between 4 and 6 months. France and several other Western governments have expressed concerns about Mali possibly cooperating with Russian mercenaries, something that the Malian government has denied. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Ethiopian lawmakers voted Tuesday to lift a state of emergency in place since November, enacted when forces of the Tigray region threatened to move in on the capital. Tigrayan forces later pulled back to Tigray in late December, but observers say the warring parties are effectively at a standoff. Now, despite the lifting of the state of emergency, the Ethiopian government has yet to release thousands of civilians detained under the emergency law and held without due process. Gelmo Dawit reports from Addis Ababa.
The state-run Human Rights Commission has welcomed the Ethiopian parliament's decision to end the six-month state of emergency. However, the state's rights body urged further efforts to address the issues of those imprisoned for the past 3 months and still imprisoned under the law. Ms. Gano Mulugeta is the commission's investigation director. There are a number of cases we have been closely following, but we do not have all the data about the suspects detained in all parts of the country during the past months. So the evidence we have is that there are a number of people who are still in custody in connection with the state of emergency. If it is going to be lifted, they should be set free or get their cases reviewed through regular due process. Those behind bars in many parts of the country should appear before a court, Ms. Gano said, granted the right to have an attorney and other legal access. The Human Rights Commission raised further concerns about people who were released after being held under the law. Even released prisoners are not getting proper clearance letter from authorities that would essentially allow them to go back to work, Ms. Gano said. The rights group said they are receiving complaints from people affected by the delay and have shared the matter with the relevant authorities, Ms. Gano added. Under the state of emergency, many civilians, mostly ethnic Tigrayans, have been arbitrarily arrested, accused of supporting Tigray regional leadership, according to international rights groups such as Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. The advocacy groups say the law has been used to enforce forced disappearances, torture, extrajudicial execution, and other abuses against ethnic Tigrayans residing in Addis Ababa and other regional cities. William Davison is the senior analyst for International Crisis Group. Although Ethiopia's House of People's Representatives, or the parliament, rarely goes against Ethiopia's executive body, Davison said the decision to leave the law is a step in the right direction, but only a step.
Removing the state of emergency hopefully will lead to a reduction in arbitrary detentions. Hopefully we will also see the release of all of those who've been arbitrarily detained without due process. But there is no particular reason to think that just the removal of the state of emergency will solve the political problems that are driving the security problems in Oromia, in and around Tigray, and elsewhere in the country.
Davison says the state should free all the remaining detainees, including high-profile political leaders from across Oromia region and other regions. He recommended that all the parties in the conflict work to ease tensions and engage further in constructive negotiations. VOA reached out to Jelan Abdi, the Ethiopian Federal Police Commission Public Relations Officer, but he did not respond to an inquiry about demands from the commission to release prisoners or issue clearances for resumption of work to those released. Ms. Gano says the commission will keep appealing to state authorities on the country's pressing human rights issues, but getting an appropriate response may not be immediate, he added. Gelmo Dawit for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Zimbabwe's High Court has voided the government's 3-month suspension of striking teachers, ruling the Ministry of Education overstepped its authority. The teachers went on strike last week over poor salaries, just as schools were set to reopen after a long break due to the COVID-19 pandemic. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, analysts say children's education has been caught in the crossfire.
Zimbabwe's High Court has ruled the suspension of striking teachers by Evelyn Ndlovu, Zimbabwe's Minister of Primary and Secondary Education, was illegal. Nobel Chinanu of the Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum represented the teachers in court.
We managed to present arguments before the court, and the judge has given us an order to the effect that that press statement that was issued by the Minister of Primary and Secondary Education is illegal and unconstitutional. And we managed to prove that when our client has got a right not to be suspended in such a manner, which was in violation of the public service regulations of the nation.
Government officials have not commented on the court ruling. Schools in Zimbabwe closed last year during the COVID-19 pandemic and had been due to reopen last week. Gibson Nyikadzino, an independent political analyst, says the government and the teachers must settle the strike quickly because students continue to be the losers.
Here we are seeing a lot of agitation and politicization of this from the employees. They are not keen to engage and listen to what the employer is saying. There are parties that are being affected as a result of these issues. So what has to be done is to go back to the tripartite negotiating forum and in the spirit of finding a consensus.
The tripartite he refers to is the government, the workers, and private companies. Sifiso Ndlovu from the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, the country's largest teachers union, says educators want to return to work but need more pay to sustain themselves.
And there was an indication that there are some members who are unable to travel, in particular those who are in the far distant schools in the internet. They are finding it difficult because of resources. And there were some, of course, who were saying, while we want to be at school and we are within the school environments, we still find that it is difficult for us to get food for subsistence. And that is what is now militating 100% attendance. And we hope after payday, everything will be back to normal. But that does not mean the teachers are happy with the remuneration that they are getting. They still want some more.
Taungara Ndoro is the spokesman for Zimbabwe's Minister of Primary and Secondary Education, and he says the situation in schools is now encouraging.
We have gone around government and non-government schools, and we are quite impressed by the teaching and learning that is going on. Of course, there are a few schools here and there which still face a bit of challenges.
The pay dispute goes back to October 2018 when the government stopped paying civil servants in US dollars, switching to the reintroduced Zimbabwean dollar. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
The World Health Organization and the European Investment Bank have partnered with the European Union and the African Union to raise a little over $1 billion of investments to support countries in closing the health funding gap in African countries. In the 6th EU and AU summit in Brussels, Belgium, the EU committed to support Africa for the next 7 years to help them reach the health-related sustainable development goals. Maureen Ojambo reports from Sacramento.
More than 40 African leaders are in Brussels, Belgium for a two-day summit that is aimed at reaffirming the European Union's influence in Africa on Thursday. The EU offered several packages of support to boost health, education and stability on the continent. The European Investment Bank will make available at least $568 million to strengthen health systems and more specifically primary health care in sub-Saharan Africa. Director General World Health Organization Tedros Ghebreyesus says investing in health is essential not just to promote and protect health, but also lifting people out of poverty.
COVID-19 is a vivid demonstration that health and the economy are closely intertwined. Far beyond its short-term economic impacts, the pandemic has seriously set us back on progress towards the sustainable development goals, which are crucial for long-term economic stability and growth. Closer collaboration between health and finance sectors is therefore essential in three ways. First, we must end the pandemic by fully financing the ACT Accelerator.
Vena Hoye is the president of the European Investment Bank, EIB. He says partnership between the EIB and the World Health Organization will strengthen public health across Africa.
Africa and Europe are committed to tackling shared global challenges of building a better future after the pandemic. Strengthening cooperation and partnerships between Europe and Africa is crucial to delivering sustainable development. EIB Global, as part of Team Europe, looks forward to even closer cooperation with African and European partners to improve lives and ensure a more sustainable future.
Despite many promises from the EU, African leaders want the former colonizers to give back to the continent. Kenya and the EU have started negotiations to close a new deal with commitments to sustainable development. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says he and other African leaders would like an intellectual property rights for COVID vaccines and treatments addressed.
But we now need to move to the TRIPS dispensation where we can make our own vaccines, and that to us is very important. Well, it means mutual respect, mutual recognition of what we can all bring to the party, investment in our economies, infrastructure investment, and in many ways for former colonizers to give back to the continent.
President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, says the EU has offered a new deal that gives way to better trade, cooperation and economic development.
The most precious investment you can do is the investment in people. We want investments in quality infrastructure, connecting people and goods and services. We can expect a package of at least 150 billion euros for Africa for the next 7 years. This is the first package under our global gateway strategy. And now we need you to tell us what the needs are and what the needs for the best for the people is.
The summit is aimed at strengthening AU-EU strategic partnerships in trade and investments, as well as other areas, climate change, the COVID-19 pandemic, peace and security. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
Tanzanian political figures are applauding after President Samia Suluhu Hassan met in Brussels Wednesday with opposition leader Tundu Lissu. Lissu has lived in Belgium since a 2017 assassination attempt. He returned to Tanzania in 2020 to run for president, but fled the country again after protests against his election laws and what he said were threats to his life. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
The meeting lasted about an hour, and afterward, the president and exiled opposition leader shook hands for the cameras. Lissu said that during the meeting, he raised concerns about his fate and that of other opposition politicians who fled Tanzania to seek asylum abroad after their lives were put in danger during the rule of late President John Magufuli. Lissu said he'd like to return home, but once President Hassan to assure his safety, the president's office issued a brief statement on the meeting and said the president and Lissu discussed issues of interest to the welfare of Tanzania. However, Lissu shared more details on Twitter. He said he asked the president to drop a case facing the Chadema Party's national chairperson, Freeman Mbowe, and three other party members who are behind bars, facing terrorism and economic sabotage charges. Some citizens said the meeting between the president and the Chadema vice chairperson show a political maturity and promise for the future. Jessica Muleba is a resident of Morogoro.
Yeah, I believe it's a very good political move. All now that we are waiting to see is whether all that was discussed will be implemented. There was a suggestion that Tundu Lissu requested the immediate release of the leader of the opposition, Mr. Freeman Mbowe, who, according to many, was captured on political grounds.
Political analysts such as Aika Peter say the meeting between the two should have a political impact on Tanzania's politics. Rights activist Kumbusho Dawson says the meeting shows that the country is going to accept a national dialogue. He says this is a new beginning toward opening up national dialogue and unifying the country. Dawson adds that, as Tanzanians, we can now hope that the country can get into observing democratic principles. In recent months, Hassan has ended bans on several media outlets and implemented other reforms to open up political space, a sharp turnaround from the authoritarian tendencies of the late President Magufuli. Charles Kombe, for VOA News, in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
And it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and with that, we go to Abuja with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sport with the qualifiers for the Women's African Cup of Nations, which will be decided this month. 20 countries face two-legged playoffs to qualify for the Women's African Cup of Nations tournament in Morocco, with the first legs taking place between the 16th and the 18th of February and the returns between the 21st to the 23rd of February. A total of 10 countries will be eliminated from the Women's World Cup qualifying as a result. Uganda, who were given a bye after Kenya withdrew and host Morocco, are already assured of a place at the Women's Nations Cup, which will be played from the 2nd to the 23rd of July this year, which will decide Africa's representatives for the 2023 Women's World Cup, with the semi-finalists all booking spots in Australia and New Zealand. South Africa Women's head coach Destry Ellis is confident of her side's success against Algeria when both sides meet on Friday. Banyana Banyana are aiming to celebrate a first ever African title on their 12th appearance in Morocco, but must avoid an upset against the Fenix, who are seeking the sixth outing in their first ever Alcon on North African soil this year.
We have to keep a clean sheet. You know, that's very, very important, keeping a clean sheet, because with the players we have, we're going to create chances. And then we have to be clinical in front of goal. And we have to, you know, protect the ball a bit better. So we've got to execute the game plan better, but we've got to make sure first that we keep a clean sheet. That's the most important thing. And then work from there to create the opportunities and be clinical in front of goal.
Elsewhere, Nigeria's women's coach Randy Wardrum has admitted that Cote d'Ivoire is a strong side ahead of the encounter on Friday. The Super Falcons are eyeing a 12th consecutive appearance at this year's Continental Showpiece, but must avoid another upset against the Elephants of Cote d'Ivoire, who dumped them out of Tokyo 2020 Olympic qualifier in 2019. Staying with football news on the African continent, the CAF Champions League 2021-2022 continues this weekend with the second match day of the group stage. Al Hakli of Egypt, after participating in the FIFA Club World Cup where they finished in third place, will be away to Sudan, where they will face Al Hilal at the Al Hilal Stadium in Omdurman. AS Setif will welcome Raja Casablanca to the Stade du 5 Juillet in Algiers, while Horoya will travel to South Africa, where they will meet AmaZulu at the Moses Mabhida Stadium in Durban. On Saturday, it will be the turn of Mamelodi Sundowns as they travel to Al Salam Stadium in Cairo, where they will face Al Merrikh, while Atletico Petroleros will welcome Wydad to their Estadio the 11th of November in Luanda. And now to athletics. Race organizers for this year's Kenya's Kipkino Classics believes this year's event will boost competition in sprints on the continent and enhance Africa's chances at the World Championships and Commonwealth Games. Race director Barnaba Kurie said a record number of sprinters are being invited at the one-day event set for May 7th at the Nyayo Stadium in Kenya. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a great week. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Twitter and Instagram. We are also on Facebook. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great weekend, Africa.